encourages private fundraising as a means to support the Commission's budget. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions? Yes, Senator Hammond.
Not a question. I'd like to make a comment. I voted against this Asian Affairs when it was created. And we were told at the time there's no general fund involved. And I was assured by those that supported it that they would go out and raise the money. And now we see an appropriation of $129,600, a general fund, and 20,000 other funds. That is not fundraising in the private sector. That's depending on government. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to oppose all these other advocacy boards, too, because where do we draw the line? Are these the ones we stop with, or do we add some more? And having been part of this process for a few years, it bothers me that we talk about One Oregon. We talk about the hypocrisy of our past and what we did and did not do to cause discrimination. And here we are causing reverse discrimination. We're setting up classes of people with an advocacy using taxpayer dollars. And I think this is the wrong approach, and it doesn't serve anything other than create ill will between sectors of the population. And for that reason, I don't want to participate in it.
Thank
you.
Senator, further questions or comments?
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. As I've said years before, it isn't often I disagree with Senator Hannon, but I think that what's important to realize is that these commissions don't promote differences. They promote dignity and self-respect. And they advocate for that. Much as you and I discussed recently, Senator, the importance of people understanding the origins of our own people in Ireland and what they went through and tolerated via discrimination. I think it's important to recognize that what our great-grandfathers had to tolerate in Ireland and then coming to this country to try to integrate to improve their lives found even yet more discrimination. We still have people in this state that are living that same kind of a life. And we'd like to think that that doesn't happen, but it does. And I see these commissions as a means by which to create dignity, self-respect, to break down those walls, not build them. If I thought for a minute that it was creating walls, I would have joined you and not support them, but I feel strongly that it is having the opposite effect in our state.
Any further? Senator Fisher.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Why are other funds limited to 20,000, and where do those other funds come from?
The other fund limitation is clearly to encourage private fundraising activities. And this commission is doing some of that, needs to do more of that. And so the putting that out there was an encouragement for them to raise additional funds. I think we could ask staff to give us a specific intention of the commission as to where they might find those funds. Can you do that, please?
Yes, Senator. Members, Senator Crowe is correct. The other funds limitation is fully designed to allow the commission to engage in fundraising activities. There are no other sources of funds that are dedicated to the commission, or there are receipts of other funds, except for donations and grants that the commission is successful in obtaining. During the current biennium, the commission raised approximately $4,000. The other fund limitation that's been approved of $20,000 is an incentive to allow which essentially allows the commission to spend as much as $20,000 private funds that it can generate. So
Yeah, I noticed in 97-99 they had a total of $83,771 that they were limited to on other funds. Where did that money come from?
Madam Chair, Senator, this commission was not funded with general fund dollars to begin with, and it had to raise all of its monies to operate. When the commission was first proposed, the belief was that they would be able successfully to raise money privately enough so that they would not need a general fund funding. They worked hard to try to do that. They found it very difficult to raise the money, and found that that was basically all they were doing, was trying to raise money to keep themselves afloat, and believe they could be more successful if they were treated like the other commission.
Did I understand you say that they only were able to raise $4,000 to $5,000?
Yes, I think we need to ask Mr. Bender that.
How did they spend 83?
Senator, let Mr. Bender answer the question.
Members, during the third biennium, each of the four advocacy commissions received state support in the form of other funds as a transfer of funds from the Department of Administrative Services. The legislature provided support to the Department of Administrative Services of approximately $300,000 in general fund for the existing issues. These funds were essentially divided for and transferred to the advocacy commission, where in their budget they are accounted for.
This strikes me as singularly interesting. You cut the budget and turn around and give somebody else money so they can transfer it over to them. Why in the world don't we just get real and give it to them to begin with and be done with it and say transfer? I'm sure Doc didn't do this out of the goodness of their heart. And we wind up with wasting money, getting money to hide it or to cover up where it's coming from. It just doesn't make any sense. And I notice here also, we're limiting them to 20,000. How come the Hispanic Affairs Committee gets 77,000 and the Commission for Women gets 53,000 above the 29?
I can answer that. Generally, those commissions have a method and success at raising money, and they can see that money. They're able to raise it. They've got ongoing programs. The Women's Commission, for instance, has a couple things that raise a substantial commissions have to see. Maybe the other commissions will find those avenues as we encourage them to do that. Mm-hmm. But some have found more than others. Some have been around longer, and some have access to more private money.
Thank you.
Thank you,
sir.
I guess then a general question. Why then do we have to put a limit on here? What do we care how much money they raise and spend if they can go out and somebody's willing to give it? It doesn't make any sense to me. Put a limit on it. Why do we even worry about it? We give them so much general fund dollars, they can do it with what they wish to do under the guidelines, and if they can get any money anywhere from anywhere else, who cares how much it is? Why do we have to have that kind of spending?
Senator Trump.
Right, and I agree with you on the philosophy of that, and my guess is that if they found more money than the limit we give them, we would just need and okay the additional money and extend the limit. This is part of the ways and means budgeting process, that you always provide that limit. And I think we can, it's traditional, and I'm sure there are good budgeting reasons for doing it. And I'd ask the staff if they want to amplify on that. But we always basically account for all the spending these agencies are going to do in one way or another by what we appropriate and then what we give them in terms of the limitation. The way we do it. And Mr. Bender, if you want to amplify on that or anybody else.
The four commissions are state agencies, and the legislature has traditionally been interested in the budget of state meetings. The agency is envisioned to have one employee, and there are certain activities that the agency is envisioned to be engaging in. In the event that they are successful in raising more than $20,000 in other funds in donations, they would have the option of coming to the emergency board, which could provide an increase in other funds limitations. But I believe that the philosophy behind putting in a limitation at this point is that if so much additional funds were to be raised, the commission would most likely be engaging in additional activities or functions that are not currently envisioned. And since it's a state agency, this would allow either the legislature or the emergency board to review what the anticipated uses of the funds are before they are actually allowed.
We're increasing money in the general fund on these budgets. That cost and then back that amount, so they won't be spending over a bunch of money.
That's correct, This we did in this budget exactly what you mentioned a few moments ago. This is truth in budgeting. We actually put the money in this general fund rather than having gas go at some later point. Senator, did you have
some? I think we're in good shape. I just want to say this is a good budget. It's based on the governor's recommendation, but it would cut 4%, and then we also got the cooperation of DAS to cut the payments, the service payments, and so that we do a good job of funding these commissions. At the same time, we do have the 4% cut.
Thank you, Senator Cho. Are there any objections to the passage of House Bill 5006? Senator Hannon is an objection. Representative Weston is an objection. And with that, House Bill 5006 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We will move to House Bill 5007.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 5007 is the Commission for Black Affairs, and we treat it pretty much the same way we treated the Commission on Asian Affairs. The Commission of Black Affairs monitors programs and legislation designed to meet the needs of the African-American population, recommends actions to the governor and the legislature, and serves as a state government liaison with the black community. The commission was established by executive order in 1980 and by statute in 1983. As with the other advocacy commission, this budget appropriates $129,600 general fund support. This amount will support the personnel and supplies costs of the agency and is an increase of almost 30% from the current biennium level. As with the other commissions, DAS service charge reductions will allow the agency to be better funded than under the governor's budget at a lower cost to the general fund. A generous other funds expenditure limitation serves as an incentive for the commission to raise private funds to expand its activities. General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Any questions for Senator Cho on this budget? Okay, hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to Senator Hannon? Okay. House Bill 5007, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And now we will move to House Bill 5028.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This is the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. And again, the budget's treated pretty much the same way. It has $129,600, which supports the agency's costs. The other fund limitation supports the program to teach Spanish to state employees and encourages continued private fundraising efforts. And a new education program on search and seizure laws passed last session. The subcommittee approved the position associated with this new education program, but made it limited duration so that it would be reviewed before being continued for another session. General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Patrick.
I apologize. I didn't hear what you said about search and seizure law.
One of the things that the other fund's limitation is going to allow them to do is to raise some private fundraising so that they can fund some of these things. And there is a new education program on search and seizure laws, and those laws were passed last session, and they want to run an education program related to those, which can be paid for with the money that they're going to raise. And Beth can help me out more if further questions.
That sounds happy. If you have a follow-up question, you want Mr. Bender.
I'm just wondering what the purpose is, why we're having something to tell them about search and seizure laws in the state of Oregon.
Beth St. Leonard would like to make a comment.
We passed the bill last session. In fact, I carried it on the Senate floor that lowered the standard that police officers needed to have to stop a suspect to conduct a search. It created quite a concern in the minority community because the various minority communities were concerned that it allowed, for instance, a minority person in a part of a city that a minority person didn't normally live in to be stopped legally. We had a task force that worked through the interim to develop rules for the various police agencies throughout Oregon, of which I was a part of. And this is an attempt to have those in the minority community on their side understand better what that standard is and what those kinds of behaviors may be that could cause that change in the statute for certain seizures to be implemented, so that the police agencies around Oregon have been educated. As part of that bill, if you'll recall, we required there be training for them to be more culturally sensitive, and this is the other side of that coin, so that the communities can understand better the kinds of behaviors that could cause police officers to suspect that some criminal activity could be afoot. And so.
Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm familiar with what was done last session. I was one of the people on the ground who was advising police officers on what they should do in regards to the search and seizure program. We reviewed this in our Ways and Means Public Safety Subcommittee. We've also reviewed the report that was put forward. I don't feel like it should be the job of this commission to do this and go out and try and raise funds to do this kind of program. So in light of that, I'm supportive of the administration and I'm supporting the Senate Commission, but I can't support that kind of program in it. We decided not to fund it through in the public safety sub, and I'm not going to be supporting it here.
Thank you.
I feel like it's the teacher is trying to tell people how to circumvent the law.
That's not true, though.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Thank you. This is one of the commissions as chair of the General Government Subcommittee last session, that one of all of the minority commissions that were reduced in amount, and I have seen a change over the last biennium in all of these commissions in their actions. I've been pleased with what has happened. In this particular case, though, I do not understand why this commission. I have two statements about this commission being able to raise funds for this particular education project. Number one, we were told during those hearings, the last session, that the Hispanic Commission is essentially a lot of poor migrant worker type folks that they help, and that these people have no means to be able to raise funds for any of the activities of the commission. That was what the commission came forward and said, is if you give us seed money to raise money, we don't have the wherewithal and the ability to raise funds in this community. And so to set aside what I believe, I agree with Representative Patrick, this is setting aside a limitation to be able to raise funds, which they told us they couldn't do, to educate them how to circumvent the law. That is what I believe is being done here. And I simply cannot support this budget based upon that sort of a desire for this commission to do. So,
Madam Chair.
Ms. Van Horn.
I'm very disappointed in those remarks from both Senator Kutub and Representative Pappage. Again, I carried this bill and believed that it would protect citizens and police officers, and that's why I did. And I took no small amount of heat for doing it from the various minority communities. But what I explained to them and what this is attempting to do is not circumvent the law. It is attempting to explain to various cultures who dress differently because of their culture, behave differently because of their culture than we do, that some of those kinds of behaviors can cause current concerns for police officers, and they need to be aware that it isn't a racial issue oftentimes that's causing them to be detained and stopped, but rather an issue of appearance. And that new law allows appearances more so than ever to kick in the standard for which police officers can use to stop and detain and search certain people, that at times it's done because of an objective reason and not some subjective reason based on race. That's what this program is intended to do, and I would also point out that it's funded by private sources. This is not public dollars that are funding this, but this is the kind of thing that I think lowers tensions, not teaches people to circumvent the law, but lowers tensions. So I worked with the police agencies through the interim. I work with these communities during the interim to try to get them both to understand that there is a need that the police had to address in order to protect all of us more. And that's all this is doing.
Mr. St. Patrick?
I just wanted to say, my objection to you is that I believe that we're funding through general fund dollars these people to help go out and coordinate and raise. Excuse me, Representative Leonard, I'm speaking.
These are private funds. These are not general
funds. Representative Leonard, you'll have to...
These are going to be private funds, but they're going to come through a government agency, and a government agency is administering those. The policies, things that we considered when we were funding other programs and public safety subcommittees, I don't believe that this is an appropriate thing for this particular commission to be doing. I think there's a lot of other programs the commission can be doing. That's why I object, and I also believe that it unfortunately would reinforce some of the beliefs that may be out there that these people are being stopped from a racial basis, and I think the reports conclude that actually wasn't the case. So.
Okay. And
I just want to say that we're trying to encourage this agency to raise funds. It is difficult. I think that the general Hispanic population is a poor population. It's harder for them to raise funds than others. We're trying to encourage them by giving them a limitation to do that. Some of the things we're going to do besides the program that Representative Patridge is objecting to is to teach Spanish to state employees, a new education program, so they're not doing this with the general fund dollars that we're giving them that pays for the staff, services, and supplies and other kinds of things. We want them to raise money, and we want them to feel free to initiate the kind of programs they want to initiate that are helpful. I think they believe this program would be helpful, not harmful, to increase the education about these matters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to follow up on the other comment that was made by Representative Leonard about certain cultures looking a certain way and dressing a certain way and therefore being stopped. Mm-hmm. The education process should be on the police, and I think that has taken place. They are the ones that need to be educated about how different cultures dress differently. If a police, if a law enforcement officer thinks they have reason to stop somebody for some reason, whatever it is, and they are only dressed a certain way, there is no reason for them to seize anything because there is nothing to seize unless they take their clothes. So it isn't about how they look. And if there's any education process to be done about how a particular race dresses and their how they act culturally, it is for the enforcement branch to be knowledgeable about that and not just consider that a reason to stop and search these individuals. It is not the other way around, because if there's nothing to seize or search, then nothing will happen and they don't need the education process.
Senator, are there, first of all, did you want to make a
comment? Well, I mean, I don't want to beat this thing to death, but that's just exactly the opposite of what we were told, what I was told when we passed this bill. That in fact, the specific example given to me by the district attorneys was, under the prior law, if a person in the middle of the summer at midnight is standing outside of a 7-Eleven store wearing a ski mask, that was not reason to detain the person and ask them what they were doing. That in fact, specific clothing that could lead one to be suspicious of what a person's activities were going to be were not good enough to kick in the detention. A bulge under the coat was not good enough for a police officer to ask a person what was under their coat. So this statute that we passed addressed those issues. So specifically, it is attire that people wear that can lead to suspicion. If you're walking around at midnight with a long trench coat on, for example, in the middle of the summer, my understanding of the current law is they can now detain an individual for that, but before they couldn't. And it's important for people to understand that those kinds of behaviors don't necessarily need to be racial. They can be just simply how one chooses to dress. And that's, and my understanding of what they're doing here is educating that community, as well as we've tried to do with, as Senator Kucharb correctly pointed out, we have done with the police community, that there's a middle ground here that you have, that both sides have to come to. And it can't be every time a minority person is stopped that they think they're being picked on. And on the other hand, the police need to understand, because they see an African-American driving through Southwest Portland, that doesn't allow the law to kick in to pull over that car and ask that person what they're doing in the neighborhood. And those communities were concerned about that occurring.
Yeah. I have a quick question about the black
community.
I understand that. And maybe this should go back to the subcommittee. But I have a question. Does the Black Commission have funds to be able to raise to educate to minorities there? Does that commission have money in it for this?
That's for hearing. I don't believe it was.
No, I didn't think so.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Patrick.
I just wanted to say that is not the current state of the law. That is not the law that was passed. You can detain someone for wearing a trench coat. I want to make that clear.
In your opinion, Representative Patrick.
Good discussion.
If they're wearing their trench coat in the middle of summer, they should be alone. Because it could be the worst thing to be cross-changing the American
mission last time. How much money was donated to the Hispanic mission?
Excellent question, Senator Fisher. Mr. Bender, do you have that information?
Yeah. I'm talking about private
donations, not from government. Not from the
The commission did not. It is estimated to have not received any donations and grants in the 1997-99 biennium. I do wish to state that for this particular package, I believe that the expectation is that if the funds could be raised for this package, they would come from a grant. But no specific funding source has been identified that I know of as of now to fund the education package that the committee has
Okay. Senator Fisher.
Yes.
guess I would have to understand the terms then that they didn't work, they weren't even raised with the rate of bills. They expect to raise $7,495 when the Asian Commission raised about $4,000, but only being allowed to raise $20,000. It boggles my mind.
Mr. Senator? Representative, I don't know who is for Trustee Schrader.
Well, I'll defer to Representative Butler.
Representative Butler, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If they, in fact, raise the additional monies for these special programs, then they would be available for expenditure for the purposes which they're intended. If they cannot raise any, as has been the case in the past, and they don't raise the additional funds for the intended purposes, then they won't spend them for the intended purposes. I think that perhaps there are ambitious goals. I would rather set high goals and have the Hispanic Commission or the Commission on Hispanic Affairs set high goals and fail to attain the high goals than have them set low goals and fail.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
That was my contention with the 25 limitations of age there. Now, if they were told that if they could raise more money, they could come back to the E-Board and get permission to send it. Now, why in the world can't we have a 20,000 limit? If you think fairly, and if they go out and raise 77, let them come back to the E-Board and justify it like everybody else.
And I think that's a good question. I think in the case of this commission, they have a specific goal in mind for what they would do with the additional funds, and they obviously have a specific target amount for a grant that they intend to apply for. I think that's a little different than the Asian Affairs Commission, who maybe didn't have a specific target or goal in mind. And 20,000 is still five times what they raised last biennium, and again, they can come to us for expenditure limitations in the interim.
Thank you.
Representative Schrader.
I'd like to move the previous question.
Thank you.
Very thoroughly.
Thank you, Representative Schrader. I do appreciate that. Okay. Are there any objections to the passage of House Bill 5028? Senator Putub, Senator Hannon, Representative Patrick. House Bill 5028, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We will be skipping now to stay with our advocacy. Skipping to Senate Bill 5540. Senator Truck.
Is 5540 is the one we're at, and that's the Commission for Women. And this commission has been treated pretty much the same as the others. A commission offers forums on women's health care. The general fund appropriation fully supports the agency's personnel and supplies costs. The other fund limitation supports the agency's annual Women of Achievement Dinner, a grant to offer health care forums on menopause, and another grant to produce a newsletter. The general government subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator Cho. Are there any questions of Senator Cho or discussion? Okay. Are there any objections to the passage of Senate Bill 5540? Senator Hannon? Senate Bill 5540, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
What?
Okay. We're going to, because we need one of our staff members to be able to perform some other duties this morning, we're going to go to Senate Bill 5525. Senator Ferriola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 5525. Senate Bill 5525, comes from the General Government Subcommittee, and who recommends passage. This is a budget bill for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Well, OLCC regulates the manufacture, possession, sale, and distribution of alcoholic beverages. The agency budget is financed with revenue from liquor sales, beer sales, wine sales, which produces taxes, and also license fees and fines. Revenues after subtracting the mandated transfers, the agency's administrative costs are distributed to the general fund and shared with cities and counties. the group budget of $70.4 million, is 2.4% below the governor's revised budget and 5% above the current services level. The subcommittee identified $110,928 in reductions that can be taken without affecting services and shifted $1.9 million to the cost of credit test to the non-limited budget. The budget will allow the agency to cover all the necessary investments. The subcommittee provided $495,377 in four positions to increase regulatory activities relating to underage drinking, with instructions to balance the enforcement program by adding a component of focus on minors and apprentices to minors. Certificates of participation amount to $2.5 million are provided to some enhancements to the merchandise and regulatory business systems, as well as to the resource needed to make repairs and updates to the office and warehouse facilities. The budget also provides over $38 million for agent compensation, and that is increased to $1.1 million over the current service level, resulting from increased estimates and necessary revenue for the biennium. Otherwise, the budget will finance the agency's administrative expenses at the current service level. The subcommittee also identified $2.9 million in additional revenue that can be achieved by implementing the agency's recommendations to trim its liquor inventory and excess inventory in liquor stores. The subcommittee added budget notes that require the agency to evaluate the feasibility of allowing expansion into related liquor sales items by liquor store agents and package store licensees to sell distilled spirits. It also requires the agency to develop performance standards for the merchandising program and to implement proactive measures in lieu of penalties, and to provide a report on the actual administrative costs to establish a license and or transfer of existing licenses compared to the fees charged. The subcommittee recommends approval of this budget.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Ferrioli? There are no questions. Are there any objections to the passage of Senate Bill 5525? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 5525 has received the required majority and is passed to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Senator Hannon, we will now go to Senate Bill 5529.
Madam Chair, members, this is the budget for the military department. The department is responsible for the Oregon Army and Air National Guard and the Oregon State Defense Force. The federal government provides approximately 97% of the funding. Your subcommittee approved a budget of $53,793,449, 360.32 FTE, and that is a 6.6% to the governor's recommended budget. The recommended budget includes programs to fund the four 22-week youth corps or youth challenge programs in Bend, tuition assistance to be used to recruit and retention of National Guard members, with the possibility that they can use the retention funds for college education. Restore funding to operate the military museum in Clackamas, and establish a natural resource specialist and a construction project manager for the Air National Guard. We would urge the passage of this budget.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Are there any questions for Senator Hannon? Okay, hearing and seeing none, are there any objections? Oh, Senator Fisher.
Funding was reduced. Well, Senator, you'll have to take that up with a higher level than my job qualifications, but somebody in Washington, D.C. appropriated less money than the National Guard. And I think it's at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. No. They were cut back on their appropriation to reach a balanced budget.
Senator Bryant?
Two comments. In my conversations with our military department, part of that is a result of the Bosnia situation.
Yeah.
And the continued peace movement there was take several million dollars, and I guess probably tens of millions of dollars.
Unavailable.
And so what that happens is that that money comes out of other areas of the military. So that's one reason for it. And I do want to point out that even though this is located in Deschutes County on the youth challenge program, the youth that are put into that, which are high-risk juvenile youth, come from all over the state. It's just not a
Thank you, Senator Wright. Representative Schrader?
Yes, I've been, and I will on some of these other budgets, have concerns because they interfere with the ability to fund the our K-12 education, but this, I think, is a pretty good budget from my standpoint. Increased revenues and the tuition assistance program and youth challenge program, even if it wasn't the chairman's district, are very good programs, and I think they complement, frankly, the K-12 effort. I think they also complement the juvenile crime prevention package, and are funds that are very well spent, and I think will help the youth of Oregon a great deal.
Thank you,
Representative Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. In spite of the sophomoric and pejorative statement as a good representative from Canby, I would like to point out two things about the Oregon Youth Challenge Program. One, it is arguably the most effective juvenile crime prevention program that we have in this state, perhaps even anywhere in the country. Of the 582 graduates of that facility, only five, or less than 1%, have entered into an adjudicated type situation after 5 years. So less than 1% recidivism. That's truly a remarkable statistic and achievement that we should emulate around the state, lacking the fact that other counties have not stepped up to the plate to make the significant commitment to statewide juvenile crime reduction and prevention. I would like to point out that only 32% of the participants come from Deschutes County. I can't give you the exact percentages, but I know 32 kids come from right here in Marion County, 27 from Clackamas in your good district, representative. So this truly is a statewide program, one of the very best things we do in this state.
All right, any further questions or comments?
Madam Chair, I would say that this supports the peacekeeping force in Bend, Oregon. It's major, and we should keep the residents separated over there. So
thank you, Senator Hannon. That's great. Okay, are there any objections to the passage of Senate Bill 5529? Representative Ross? Okay. Senate Bill 5529, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now we will go back to our first page of our schedule and go to House Bill 5017. Representative Ross?
Madam Chair, I need to be especially persuasive since the representative from
Central Oregon
has stated that he's going to vote against this bill no matter what its merits, since I voted no on his last bill. So I'm going to try my best. House Bill 5017 is the budget bill for the Department of Education's grant and aid programs. Funds in this budget are distributed to school districts and other local programs that provide services to children with special education needs. Programs include Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program and the federally funded Compensatory Education Nutrition Program. The subcommittee approved a budget of $739 million total funds. The budget is a 0.4% decrease from the governor's recommended budget and a 14.5% increase over the 1997-99 estimated expenditures. The subcommittee added $1,855,000 general fund for expansion of the Oregon pre-kindergarten program. It removed the following amounts in the budget and appropriated them as special purpose appropriations for the department in the emergency fund. $10.1 million general fund for early intervention, early childhood special education programs, $345,000 general fund for the Oregon pre-kindergarten program, and $90,000 for the Junior Achievement Program. The department is directed through budget notes to provide additional information on these programs to the emergency board. The subcommittee approved changes in expenditure limitations for a number of federal programs based on information available after the governor's budget was prepared. Included in these changes is for class size reduction and for special education. The subcommittee instructed the department in a budget note to direct $5 million to increase special education funding for regional programs. And we did work hard on this budget in committee, and we did develop a budget note that directed the department to work on their early childhood intervention and early childhood special education programs. And this was because of the rapid growth of this program, in which the expenses in the program outstripped remarkably the amount of money that the federal government provided. And LFO had done a study last year of this program, and we found that our expenses were higher than several other states, and that we were not adequately accessing funding sources, and that there was an inadequate ability to determine the cost of these programs, because they were mixed locally with local funding through the contractors, and we couldn't tell accurately the cost of the program. So we did provide a budget note to them requesting that they make vigorous efforts to secure other funding sources, especially federal funding, that they revise their data collection process so that we could get an accurate assessment of the actual cost of these programs, and that they develop a plan for cost containment which would not affect quality or service levels. And I think both the Department of Education, Jane Mulholland, the advocates, and the committee were satisfied with this result. So we look forward to improvements in that program without having to reduce the amount of expenditures. And with that, I would recommend approval.
Thank you, Representative Ross. Are there any questions, Senator Fisher?
Are these funds in any way at all included in the
Senator Fisher, no, they are not. These are funds that are allocated for special programs. It's the preschool special education program that these covers, and the Oregon pre-K program. These are programs to work with disadvantaged and special education students before they enter school. There are a couple of other programs in here that for smaller amounts, junior achievement, student leadership centers, and then the regional programs that provide backup support to local special education programs.
Ask your question.
They are not part of the K through 12 regular allocation at all.
I'm sorry, you got all of my name.
Senator, we when we look at the end of when the session is completed, a lot of times we look at the total dollars that have been spent on all education, and this is certainly included in that. But it is not. These are special grants and aid. These are not the grants that go out to the schools for the state school fund. These are special purpose grants and aid.
I just want to comment that the good representative's argument, or the good representative from Corvallis's arguments, were extremely convincing, and so I would be enthusiastically supportive of that.
Thank you, Representative Wessler. Are there any other questions or comments on House Bill 5017? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the passage of this budget? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 5017 has received the required majority and is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We will now move to House Bill 5057, Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House Bill 5057 is the budget bill for Oregon State University System statewide public service program. These programs include the Agricultural Experimentation Extension Service and Forestry Research Lab. Although all three of these programs are housed at Oregon State University, each offers services statewide. Ag experimentation conducts research in agricultural, biological, and environmental sciences relating to Oregon agriculture and associated industries. Forestry Research Laboratory conducts similar research related to forestry and wood products and processing technology. And the Extension Service, for assistance county extension agents, extension specialists, and volunteers, takes research findings directly to the citizens through numerous non-credited programs and the 4-H program. The programs funded in this budget are fundamental to the health of Oregon's agriculture and forestry sectors. The research develops better products and improves management to help these industries remain competitive and protect the natural environment. House Bill 5057 appropriates $93.1 million in general fund to the statewide public services. This includes almost $13 million in new projects that will address some of the most pressing problems facing agriculture and forest industries today. In so doing, these new projects will help the rural Oregon share of the state's economic growth. This bill is a key component of the legislature's efforts to reinvest in higher education, and the Natural Resources Subcommittee urges your support. Colleagues, during the hearing on these bills, on this bill, what we heard was the agricultural agencies through Oregon State University and the research departments are the fifth in the nation for leveraging dollars, so that every dollar that we extend in this direction produces $6 worth of additional investment from outside firms and other consumers of our research facilities, and those dollars eventually are leveraged into a competitive advantage for many of Oregon's agricultural products. The Forestry Department is the first in the nation for leveraging dollars for research. So this $13 million in additional investment represents an extremely valuable investment in a heck of a leveraging opportunity to put additional dollars into the higher ed program and serve rural communities directly, and we urge your support.
Thank you, Senator Fedele. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The remarks I made on the higher ed budget some time back, unfortunately I voted no, I'm going to have to also vote no on this one for the same reasons. I mean, I would very much like to be able to vote for this, but it is an increase of $12.5 million over the governor's recommended budget. And given that we do not at this time still have a co-chair's budget released so that we know how this fits into the entire program, I think it's irresponsible to decide to spend an extra $12 million in a program without understanding how it affects not just K-12, the human resource programs. The AARP was down yesterday lobbying for transportation funds for the elderly. I know that, for instance, we have just by way of example, of a small example, we have the World Affairs Council budget that I think wants $60,000, as I recall, to fund them. That's languishing somewhere, a very worthy program. And so to spend beyond what the governor's recommended, $12.5 million, stretches me beyond what I can do for higher ed at this time, so I'm going to have to vote no.
Mr. Rustay,
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I do have a comment, though. Having served on the Natural Resource Sub, I think this is a very good budget. We all know the economic needs of rural Oregon, and I think this is playing very well into satisfying some of those needs. Not to say that this budget is only for rural Oregon, however. There's a lot of in this budget that will benefit the urban areas, metro areas as well. We heard that during the testimony that there's tremendous needs beyond what this budget is, what the department's education could be doing. For instance, in forest health, both in east side and west side, there could be millions of dollars more that should be spent in trying to avert a disaster, in my opinion. I also want to commend the university and the system for the presentation they made to it. I thought it was very thorough, very well organized, and very well explained, and we had a good exchange. exchange of information. So I'm very strong in support of this budget.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I too am in support of this budget and program, and just wanted to make a brief comment. The needs are great. This is the first time in five sessions that this particular program, the extension service and the overall program of the agricultural research and extension in this state has received an increase. And other than flat funding and cutting, I think we're in a situation where we're facing some very delicate agricultural issues, not just in the state of Oregon, but throughout the United States. And one of the things that we're talking about is increasing our port size and our port capacity to handle the grain that's going to be shipped. And we're in a situation worldwide where the grain will be controlled by just a very few seed companies very shortly. And it's important to maintain in the public domain much of the information which we will be able to generate within this budget. So I want to express my support for this budget, first increase since 1989, I believe, and also in addition the fact that this isn't what they requested. They requested they need more than this in order to sustain themselves. But this will be returned to the general fund in taxation many times, so every year. And so I feel very strongly that this is an excellent program, and it's an excellent return on our investment for Oregon education as well.
Thanks,
Trainer. I've got a question. My understanding was that the players in the extension, forestry, experiment station had worked out some budget priorities prior to the session. They came in to the session with their $4 or $5 million package. Is that correct?
It was actually about a $22 million package that they came in with.
Well, didn't they have some sort of agreement, though? I thought that they had talked about some priorities within that they were more interested in than others.
Really, what I maybe Senator Fraley, you're carrying the bill. The package that was brought to us originally was about a $22 million
right.
package.
Madam Chairman, and in response to Representative Schrader's question, the priorities that were set were brought to us by the agencies, and they were in the governor's budget. The agricultural community itself, which knows intimately well the needs of the research stations and the other sectors, put together a proposal totaling over $22 million. And we had some very difficult, long, soul-searching discussions about prioritizations, and the budget that you see recommended before you is actually in the direction of Senator Leonard's earlier comment. It's maybe $12.4 million higher than the governor's recommended, but it's a total of $12,850,000 in additional spending. And those are the priorities that essentially have been brought from the industry sectors forward as specific leveraging investments in areas that will build capacity. And the interesting thing about this capacity building is that with the additional dollars that will come into the research project, the ironic part of all this is that it does empower education and it does deliver services directly to communities and it will strengthen our education system. So we're arguing about education funding at the base of all this, and here we are trying to put more education funding available that will benefit K through 12 high schools, community colleges, higher ed, and research facilities. I hope that answers your question, Mr.
Schrader.
Yeah, I'll make a comment. I appreciate that. I had some discussions with some of the people involved in extension, and I understand that there was a larger package that was, you know, their wish list coming in, and in the perfect world, this would be a great budget, but they actually had come to some agreements, as I understood it, on some priorities at a much lower figure, and I'm getting really concerned that at this point in time that higher education is getting a very nice package, almost a 25% increase this session, and then we look at the K-12, even if we get just a 495, we're talking only about a 8 or 9% increase in the K-12 budget. So the disparity, we passed out an engineering addition for $5 million. We've got $12 million here, plus we're $15 million more in the base higher education budget. I'm getting very concerned that while higher education needs help, and goodness knows I've been a big beneficiary of higher education over the years, that we're going too far one way. And as a result of that, I guess I'm just very concerned and think that maybe we've got our priorities a little bit too far ahead of ourselves. And I think we'll probably see this budget again, and hopefully we can, you know, work things out.
Madam Chairman, I think I've understood the question, and I understand the question, and I'll try to respond to it. What we had heard in the last legislative session prior to this was that we seriously disinvested in higher education. And a very strong case was made for a pattern of disinvestment. I think the budgets that we're seeing in higher education in this legislative session are attempts to deal with that disinvestment. And that's why we saw the Oregon University system come forward with a completely different configuration. Similarly, there's been disinvestment in some of the issues in natural resource production. And I think this budget that we're seeing brought forward is also an attempt to deal with a level of investment in natural resources is 1.3% of the total budget, which when compared to other states that have high agricultural and timber interests, is not an appropriate number. You know, we really should be doing more, and this is a small step in that direction. I would assume that in future legislative sessions, we'll see a different focus perhaps in the universities outside the Willamette Valley corridor and also in the community colleges. But as these priorities come up, it seems like the pendulum swings a little bit. I think you may be seeing this as a reaction to the recognition that we've not invested in higher ed as we needed to, and not invested in the research aspects of the university system as this budget now attempts to do.
Just a quick follow-up. I appreciate that, and I think there's a lot of accuracy in what the good senator said here. However, I think if we look at the K-12 budget with the local resources going down to almost zero, down from 70 to 30% of the budget, they too have had a tremendous disinvestment inadvertently by some of the actions of the voters in the state legislature in past sessions. So when I was out there campaigning and talking to people, they were a little more concerned, at least this session, about the K-12 than the higher ed. So I'm hoping we strike a balance as we get down the road here. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I am excited about this budget. It's something that I haven't seen in my 16 years in the Oregon legislature, where we have really helped balance a system that has been unbalanced, as the senator from John Davis alluded to. I'm excited, and I compliment the people that have worked on this. I think they've done an excellent job from the departments and the people involved, and as far as I'm concerned, this is a go-home bill for me. It means a lot to my district, and if you notice, it is all over the state of Oregon. It just isn't in one area. I think we've done a great job on this budget, and I think we have something to be proud of, and I would certainly urge the governor not to veto this bill.
Thank you, Senator. Let's have that.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. With great reluctance, I will vote no on this budget. I believe the governor will veto this budget unless we get a resolution on the overall budget picture. These are very important things, and I agree with the carrier that each of these things is worthy. They've worked hard. They've done a good job of prioritizing these expenditures, and they will benefit the whole state. And so if this is ultimately included in a balanced budget, this is money well spent. But until we have a balanced budget, then I'll vote no, and I think the governor will be.
Thank you, Representative Westland.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just a couple of points to try to put this whole thing in perspective. But before I make those, I sincerely want to compliment the chairman of the Ways and Means Natural Resource Subcommittee. Senator Ferraioli did an exceptionally fine job of this budget. I'd also like to compliment our co-chairs for taking up the cause and pushing this budget forward and making some very painful reductions to what was originally proposed. And I'd like to compliment all the stakeholders in the agricultural committee agricultural community that recognize that a basic principle I wish all of us around here would recognize more often, and that is while you can have darn near anything you want, you can't have everything you want. And so I think the many of the people at OSU and the agricultural community did a fine job of pairing and prioritizing. But more than that, everyone here should know, some of the perceptions and the realities that we deal with in the budget writing process. And number one is that there's been one budget, one, that has truly suffered actual dollar cuts since 1991, and that's higher ed. It is long overdue that we reinvest in what is unquestionably one of the most vital services we provide, in this building and that we do statewide. And I don't want to pit that against K-12, as is so often done, and you hear so often, and it's got to be a mantra almost, a refrain around this building, that against K-12, well, higher ed against K-12 has lost for five sessions. K-12 today has not suffered either actual dollar cuts or inflationary cuts. It's not as great as we would all like, but they have not suffered the way higher ed has. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Knight.
Well, I have to take issue with that. I think that K-12, one of the myths that's propagated is in our general fund allocations, we have increased funding for K-12, and if you narrow the argument to that, that's correct. But from the school district's point of view around this state, they have suffered real cuts. They have suffered because of larger classroom size. And I appreciate the arguments used in support of 5057 in that they speak to an investment and a return on that investment will increase resources to the general fund, and I don't have an issue with that. I agree with that. I think the frustrating part for some of us is that we're trying to communicate that kind of philosophy to the majority party when you invest in K-12. That if you can have more counselors that can identify at-risk youth, do something to prevent them from getting into trouble, do something to get them succeeding in school, then they become successes, they get jobs, and they return money to the general fund as well. That same philosophy applies. And so I think that's kind of where we're having a disconnect in our communications over this K-12 debate and the other general fund services, that some of us actually view that not just as an expense, but as an investment on kids that can then be productive members of our society who otherwise are going to fall through the cracks of our society and become expenses and not contributors.
Just a quick comment, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry to drag this out. We're getting a bit off topic, but factual correction here. We did represent it from Central Oregon. Point in fact, since Measure 5, the last few we've had to endure Measure 5, if you compare the tuition increases and the state support in higher ed against the local revenue support and the amount of state support to K-12, we'll find that both have suffered equally. Neither side has gotten huge increases. They're both increasing at a very microcosm rate. And so the actual amount of spending or expenditure limitation, if you will, available to them has been exactly the same since Measure 5. And here now all of a sudden it's 25% for one group and only 8 or 9% maybe for the other group. So I think it is legitimate to have some concerns.
That's very last one.
I suppose this debate could go on quite a while. I appreciate Representative Leonard's statement of, I think, putting qualification on. It is not debatable. I mean, if you take inflation, K-12 funding per student, not classroom size, caseload growth, I mean, numbers of students, we are spending, I'm not saying this is adequate, I'm not saying this is enough, I'm just saying that per student spending, K-12, as driven for inflation, is the same as we were doing in 1991. They have not been cut. Higher ed, on the other hand, has suffered dramatic reductions. That's not a moot point, period. End of story. Madam, I moved to you.
I have several other people, and they had their hands raised first, so I'm gonna let them make a comment, including myself, I might add. Rep. Minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're talking percentages this morning. I want to say that I am supportive of this budget as I was the higher ed budget. The combination between those two budgets is about $28 million. Percentages, an 8% increase in the K-12 budget at 4725 is a $400 million increase from the last biennium. So to say that this legislature isn't interested in investing in K-12 is inaccurate. I am supportive of this budget. I think $28 million versus $400 million is quite a difference. And I'm for this budget. I think it's well-deserved, and it's a good investment. And I feel very comfortable supporting this budget. Thank you.
Director Amen. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm supporting this budget, and I also want to compliment the Chair of Natural Resources for his work on this budget. If you look at the investment in our agriculture research and what it pays back to the economy, it is critical. We are way behind there. If you look at the 4-H development issues in this budget, if you look at the watershed enhancement issues in this budget, they are critical, controlling weeds so that we have more productive crops. So I am going to be very supportive of this budget. I would say, though, in regard to some of the comments from some of my House members, and I do agree with, and that is, if this is an important budget, as I do believe it is, and if we look at K-12 education, that is going to play a factor. And I think it's going to test our leadership and creative skills to make sure that we adequately fund K-12 education. If, in fact, as we get to the end of the bottom of this funnel, that this budget actually survives. And so I would say to all of us on this panel and those in the audience supporting this budget, that its survival is going to have a lot to do with our creative skills and making sure that we do adequately fund K-12 and look how we're going to balance all of these issues. And I hope at the end of the day we do have these enhancements because they are critical.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Trump.
I'd like to agree with Senator Metzger and what he said. Clearly, these budgets are important. They are the kind of budgets that make an investment in Oregon. They're the kind of thing that stimulates the economy and are good. I've supported these budgets all the time I've been in the legislature because I believe they're important services that we provide for the state. I do know, though, that in the past, since the passage of Measure 5, we've really not been able to enhance higher ed's budget. We've made actual cuts. 100 programs were cut after Measure 5 passed in higher education. So higher education has suffered. The public schools have suffered as well. While in that period, since Measure 5 passed, we've given over $1 billion worth of tax relief. And I hate to see pitting one part of education against another when the tax relief is also a problem that we really don't deal with. That aside, I'm going to support these budgets. I've always supported them. I'm going to support them. I do know, though, that as we face the overall problem of balancing the budget, that we're going to have to look very carefully at everything we do to see whether we can fund it. I hope we can keep these funded because I think they're a very good budget.
Thank you, Senator Trump. I'd like to make some comments about this budget, too. This is a budget that I am very pleased with. This is an area, both higher ed and these specific programs, that have been underfunded for a very long time. And this is not just an education budget. I think that's a very crucial part of it, but it is also an economic development budget, much of which does go to rural Oregon, but a lot of it does stay right here in the valley. Agriculture is our number one industry in the state of Oregon. And forestry is, I believe, number three now behind high tech. And I think it is important that we do support these industries. They do return a great deal of dollars. And we have very critical things here. There's grass seed research. That is one of the largest parts of agriculture is grass seed. Same thing with the nursery, wheat and small grains, the viticulture for our winery folks, and hazelnuts. We are the largest producer of hazelnuts in the United States, and that industry is faced with severe blight conditions. And I think, again, as I said, this does go to all areas of the state. We have funding in here for the Food Innovation Center in Portland, which is very, very wonderful program. And I agree with Senator Metzger on the 4-H issues and the watershed issues. Those are critical issues, which will help us with our salmon restoration problems. So I feel very strongly about this budget, and again, it is for education, but it's also for economic development, and will have a tremendous return to the state of Oregon. Are there any further comments? Okay, hearing and seeing none. Let's do a roll call on this, Mr. Simpson.
Mr. Hannon.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Mr. Ryan.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
House Bill 5057, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we will now move to House Bill 5065, Representative Butler, and Mr. Co-Chair, if you'll take the gavel for us in a moment.
Representative Butler. House Bill 5065 is the C bill, which authorizes the Oregon Board of Radiologic Technology to establish their increased fees. 1997 legislature moved the board's fees from statute, which allowed the board to go ahead and increase its fees in the interim from $3 to $5 per month with the approval of the Department of Administrative Services. The changes to the administrative rules are subject to review in the next legislature, which is the 1999 legislature. These increases were made because of projected low cash reserves in the RT. The Board of Radiologic Technicians protects and benefits the public health and safety by licensing and regulating the RT operators and verifies completion of continuing education requirements. Yes. It operates entirely with other funds received from the licenses and the examination fees and fines from within the RT organization. The board was formerly part of House Bill 5027, the fee bill for health-related licensing boards, but it was removed from those bills for further consideration. Okay. The General Government Subcommittee reviewed their budget de novo and approved a license fee increase from $3 per month to $4 per month, which now has the backing of the board's licensees and stakeholders. And this subcommittee recommends your approval of this bill. Thank you, Representative Butler. Any comments or questions? Comments or questions? Are there any no votes? Hearing none and seeing none, House Bill 5065 is passed. Senate Bill 5518, Division of State Lands. Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 5518 is the appropriation bill for the Division of State Lands. The Division is the administrative arm of the State Land Board, responsibility for managing the assets of the Common School Fund. These assets include over 2 million acres of land deeded to the state that entrust for education. The division also manages the removal bill, unclaimed property, the wetlands program, and operates the South Blue National Estuary Research Reserve. The budget recommended by the Natural Resource Subcommittee includes a total limited budget of $13.5 million and a non-limited budget of $71.3 million. The budget includes $11,779,608 other funds, $1,663,280 federal funds, and $36,756 general funds. The other funds are derived from the Common School Fund, which retains its revenue from constitutional statutory revenue. Federal funds are received in support of the state's wetlands program and for the South Blue. All amount of general fund is used to support the Natural Heritage Advisory Council activity. The recommended limit is 5.1% below the governor's recommended and 4.8% above the 1997-1998 expenditure. The committee approved the consideration fixing this limited duration positions as permanent in the common school and South Street program area. In addition, the income property auditor position was approved as limited duration in order to determine if the position is effective in generating additional revenue for common school funds. The committee included a budget note directing the agency to make the Wetlands Mitigation Bank more user-friendly and accessible. The Natural Resources Subcommittee denied three packages in the National Heritage Program that proposed to use Measure 66 lottery funds for the collection of GIS conversion data on sensitive and endangered fish and wildlife species. These packages, totaling $466,000, will be reconsidered, along with other priorities in the bill allocating Measure 66 lottery funds. The committee increased the non-limited other funds budget by $47 million to accommodate the possibility that the state land board would increase the amount of distribution to schools from the common school fund. The board had initially planned to distribute approximately $23 million to schools in the 1999-01 biennium, but it's currently considering the financial and legal possibility of increasing the distribution by at least an additional $40 million. Then giving the Natural Resources Committee recommends approval of Senate Bill 518.
Thank you, Senator Ferraioli. Are there any questions, Mr. Chair? Comments? Representative Lemon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support this budget. I've worked with the Division of State Lands this session more than I ever had previously to this session, and specifically on the issue of what has been occurring within the Willamette River, specifically at Ross Island, and specifically there within the lagoon at Ross Island. As some of you are aware, I have been concerned, as have a number of other groups and people, that toxic and contaminated sediments not only have been buried at Ross Island within the lagoon, which is in the Willamette River, but that those toxic sediments actually were dug up and redistributed throughout the lagoon, thereby threatening whatever species happened to be living in there, including salmonoid, at a time when we're aggressively trying to improve the quality of our waterways for the habitat of salmon. We have an activity occurring, in my opinion, at Ross Island that is in conflict with our goals to restore salmon runs. I appreciated working with Paul Cleary and members of his staff and members of ODF&W in trying to come up with some criteria for the reissuance of the permit to Ross Island Sand and Gravel to continue their operations in a way that would not threaten that species, that endangered species, and other species that are there within the lagoon at Ross Island. I am frankly unconvinced that we have met some of those goals, and I would I just want to say on the record that I would hope that Ross Island, that the Division of State Lands will consider prohibiting any more toxic materials, and they are considering allowing more, but prohibit any more toxic materials being buried within the lagoon at Ross Island Sand and Gravel, notwithstanding the scientific evidence that it may be safe even if it's capped, because it has been shown, at least up till now, that it is possible to re-enter those contaminants and toxic materials within the water of Ross Island, which ends up in the Willamette River. So this is an area I am very concerned with that I plan to spend more time on in the interim, and would like to work with the Division of State Lands. But this, Mr. Chair, I will say that this is for the future of not just the salmon and steelhead runs, but for those of us who like to recreate on our waterways, for us as a state policy to allow toxic materials to be buried in the main stem of the Willamette River is a huge mistake, and I won't bore the committee with the facts why, but it is a huge mistake and something I hope the Division of State Lands reconsiders when the Ross Island Sand and Gravel Permit comes up for renewal again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. Is there any further comments, questions? Is there any, Representative Mesmer?
I'd just like to second what Representative Leonard just stated. I've dealt with the Division of State Lands for many years when I was in business, and I've seen tremendous progress with Mr. Cleary, not only in the leasing of our submerged lands, as they've recently worked out some agreements, and I think resolved a lot of the problems there, but in the permitting process, and we're trying to coordinate with Corps of Engineers to not only reduce the obstacles to the permitting, trying to get the permits, but the time frame that they are involved. There's a lot of work I think needs to be done yet, but I see a movement and a lot of progress from those and supporting this budget.
Thank you, Representative Messerly. Are there further comments on Senate Bill 5518? Seeing none, are there no votes on Senate Bill 5518? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 5518 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We will now move in our agenda to wait on the back page, House Bill 2535. And I'd just like to let the committee know we may get called to the floor, and what we will do is take a recess motion and come back as soon as possible. I mean, if for some reason we get called to the floor, we do intend to complete our agenda today. Okay, Representative Westland.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just for the record, before we get into this, the fact that above all people, I am carrying this bill proves that reincarnation is a reality, and I must have done something very bad in an earlier life. House Bill 2535 came to Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law. House Bill 2535 extends criminal background checks for handgun purchases conducted through the Oregon State Police to long guns. This law will apply to all purchases made through licensed dealers, any person selling 25 or more firearms in 1 year, and to any firearm sold in a location where 25 or more firearms are being sold. This bill will increase the volume of workload within the State Police Identification Services section and will require the addition of 10 new positions. The new positions will be fully funded by fees paid for criminal background checks. As amended in the subcommittee, this bill allows the current $10 fee to continue until May 1 of 2000. After May 1, the records check fee is to be set to cover the cost of the program plus $1. However, the fee for each background check is not to exceed $8.50. The additional $1 fee is to be used exclusively for enforcement of laws regulating to the transfer of firearms. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the bill along with the estimated fiscal impact and amended the bill to include the A23 changes. The A23 changes address several technical issues and eliminate the need for approximately $170,000 in general fund support for startup costs. The Public Safety Subcommittee passed this bill out by a 7-1 vote and recommends your approval.
Thank you, Representative Westland. Are there any questions for Representative Westland? Any comments? Senator Ferrioli. Or Senator Fisher. Who's? Go ahead.
Yeah, by way of this, applying a federal requirement.
Okay. Yeah, yes, it does. And we have Representatives Mannix and Burdick here. Perhaps they could come to the witness.
No, not unless we need them.
Okay.
Just comply with the Senate.
Yes.
And that's the reason for it.
I can't hear you, Senator.
And that's the reason for this.
Well, I'd say there are a myriad of reasons for this.
Senator Fisher, this is in response to Senate Bill 700, and this is a different version of Senate Bill 700, which was came over to the House from the Senate. And this is the House's version of it. Thank you, Senator. Senator Ferrioli?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll be a no on House Bill 2535 as well.
I don't believe that the Second Amendment contains conditions. It is not provisional. It is not less important than any of the other elements of our Constitution. We would never accept conditions on the First Amendment. For instance, we would not consider reasonable a license to publish a newspaper. We would not consider a background check reasonable for a person to write a book. We would not permit or require a permit for an individual to send a letter to the editor. And if we hold the First Amendment sacred, why would we then think that elements of other amendments are optional? We have accepted the national background check when guns are sold through a licensed dealer, a federal licensed dealer. But once a firearm is owned by a private citizen, neither the firearm nor the citizen the laws that are designed specifically to apply to those who hold a federal firearms license pursuant to the federal firearms licensing law. A long time ago, we decided that literacy tests for voting were illegal, that poll taxes for voting were illegal, because those are abridgments of our constitutional rights. The bill before us is a bill that's been worked on very, very hard by folks who believe in earnest that there's much here for firearms owners and much here for law enforcement officers and much here to protect the general interest of the general public. And I commend them for the work that they've done. I believe that this is in response to a direct attack on Sixth Amendment rights in the Constitution. And so I will be voting no, not because I think the response is a poor response to what I think that the folks that put 2535 together don't have the best motives, but that I believe the Second Amendment is every bit as valuable as the others in our Constitution, and they all deserve protection at the highest possible level. So I'll be a no on principle on this bill.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree with those in this debate who have said that owning a firearm is a right based on the Constitution. I also agree that the First Amendment gives a certain free speech right, as my friend from John Day alluded to. But I think what those that oppose this bill fail to appreciate is each of our rights carries with it certain responsibilities. And even in the debate that we've had in this country on free speech, I believe it was Oliver Wendell Holmes that said, the right to free speech does not include the right to yell fire in a crowded theater. And that was his way and our court's way of saying that all of our rights, while they are our inalienable constitutional rights, carry certain responsibilities with them beyond which we cannot tread. In the instance of House Bill 2535, those responsibilities include, when we're speaking about the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms, include not selling those guns to people who have shown they can harm other members of our society, irrespective of our criminal laws and irrespective of our Constitution. That has been decided and I think accepted by both sides of this debate as a responsibility within the Second Amendment. That is, convicted felons, children, and the mentally incapacitated do not have the right to bear arms. What House Bill 2535 does, in my opinion, is try to walk that very narrow line between our right to bear arms and our responsibility to keep them out of the hands of people who would do harm to us with those arms by requiring that if you go to a gun show, one goes to a gun show to buy a gun, then the seller of that gun, if that person is not a licensed firearm dealer, because currently they do have to do the criminal background check whether they're at a gun show or in their shop, but just a citizen at a gun show, we would require that the person buying that gun have an instant background check. How does that infringe on one's constitutional Second Amendment rights to bear arms? I would argue it does not. I would argue the only individual it removes a gun from is a criminal, a juvenile, or one mentally incapacitated. This bill has taken a long and interesting process to get where it is today. and I appreciate both sides for the blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into this. But let's make sure we understand one thing, that notwithstanding what rhetoric we have heard or what we're going to hear before this bill makes it through the process, this is not an infringement on individuals' Second Amendment constitutional rights any more than it is an infringement on a person's right to free speech to tell them you cannot yell fire in a crowded theater. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm concerned that this bill is a knee-jerk reaction to some terrible and some unfortunate circumstances in our nation today. I don't believe that this is the proper atmosphere to go ahead and formulate new public law. I represent a district in this state where we teach respect for firearms, and I'll go on record as a protector of our freedoms to responsibly maintain private firearms. My great-great-grandfather was the leader in an armed and powerful Nauvoo Legion, which protected thousands of Mormon pioneers who were plagued by state governor's orders to exterminate an entire religion. During their exodus from Illinois and Missouri to the Great Salt Lake Valley, my ancestors kept and responsibly bore arms, and we have ever since. Oregon doesn't need to be the forebearer and the forefront of arms control. We have a Brady bill. Even as we speak today, there's new and more restrictive legislation at the federal level, which is being considered in Washington, D.C. I ask that we allow that federal legislation to sort itself out and reconsider this matter, perhaps at a later date, perhaps even consider a special session later on. I'm sure that others within this building today may be plotting towards an even more restrictive gun control initiative than is before us today in House Bill 2535. I'd urge my colleague personal responsibility and restraint in the wake of a litany of terrible crimes committed with improperly acquired and illegally possessed firearms. My vote in favor of an arms control bill would be in violation of both my heritage and the legacy of my forefathers, and I'm unequivocally opposed to House Bill 2535.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I'm going to be a no vote on this bill. I understand the problems we have in our society right now and the need for discussions and moving forward and trying to straighten out some of our problems. But this bill does not do what I had anticipated, the fixes to Senate Bill 700 that we were addressed with before. For that reason, I'm going to be a no vote at this time.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would like to compliment the Chairman Mannix and all who work on this bill. I strongly support it. I am a strong defender of the right law-abiding citizens to own firearms. This bill says something totally different, and I think it's very critical. It's a critical statement for this legislature. It says that we are no longer going to defend the right of criminals to own and purchase firearms. I think we need to stop defending the right of criminals to own firearms. This is a move in that direction. I also want to compliment the committee for their work they did to protect law-abiding citizens who own guns, to remove civil liability, which a lot of us are concerned about in transfer of those guns provided in this bill. Also, the removal of civil and criminal liability. Someone breaks in and takes our guns or misuses them after we have stored them properly. I think those are tremendous protections for gun owners. And I'm very, very pleased that those are placed in this bill. And so I'm a strong supporter of the United States.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Partridge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I tried to work diligently on this bill to provide something that I could support within this bill. I have not been able to do so. I believe that this bill will result in the elimination of gun shows where law-abiding gun owners can come together and collectors because of the background check requirement that it provides no caps upon the amount of time in which individuals can transfer firearms, even though the individual who is purchasing the firearms records or test, if there is a problem, they could go back and be arrested and the firearm taken away from them. In addition, I cannot support this measure because it weakens existing laws. It changes from a currently a misdemeanor for carrying a concealed weapon to a violation on a first offense, which I will not support as someone who's come from a law enforcement background. I cannot support that. See, I think in addition, this provides an additional tax on firearms, which has not existed currently for individuals. And for those reasons, I will not be supporting this. I think that there's some things that can be done, but unfortunately, this compromise was too much. It weakened existing gun laws in ways for law enforcement to enforce current laws, and at the same time, it, I believe, took a lot of Second Amendment rights, which are critically important to individuals, away. For those reasons, I do not believe that this is a good bill. I think that there is a better balance that can be struck. I proposed some amendments which were not taken by the committee, and for that reason, I cannot support this bill. I believe strongly in Second Amendment rights. I believe strongly that there are some limited restrictions that can be placed. But I would disagree with the analogy of my good friend from Portland about yelling fire in a theater. We have a lot of existing gun laws, just like we have laws against people yelling fire in a crowded theater. The problem is, a lot of the problem, I believe, is enforcement. We are not enforcing the laws that we currently have in regards to gun crimes. We're not providing deterrence from felons possessing firearms. Our sentencing guidelines in the state of Oregon do not provide adequate deterrence to do that. We have legislation and other pieces out there that provide a much higher deterrent effect and will discourage felons and others from possessing firearms. I will work strongly on those bills and will continue to work strongly on those bills in the future. But for those reasons, I unfortunately cannot support this piece of legislation because I think it takes away too many rights and doesn't punish the individuals that should be being punished as guilty possessing firearms.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my minute. Thank you, Madam Chair. The journey of this bill has been contentious, and we've been faced, those that are supportive of the Second Amendment have been faced with some tough choices. Senate Bill 700 did indeed have some major flaws, and I supported sending that bill onto a committee that could help craft a better bill. Both sides, I don't think, are real happy with 2535. But I did talk to the gun lobby this morning before this committee to ask them if indeed they were comfortable with this compromise, and they assured me they were, because they were at the table, and while they didn't get everything they would like, they were comfortable with this. They felt it was a better product than Senate Bill 700. So for those reasons, I'm going to support their assurances that this is a better product than 700. I will support my husband. Thank you, Representative Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A lot of comments have been made, and I guess I would draw from some of the same bill slightly different conclusions. I've been a strong supporter of Second Amendment rights and continue to do so and be so. I think it's important for the public to understand that gun owners don't really have a problem with background checks. That's not the big concern here. I think we are responsible enough to want to keep the guns out of the hands of people that shouldn't have them. But I think this bill actually is a real positive step. I had some serious trouble with Senate Bill 700 as originally presented, and I think this goes a long way, in my opinion, to taking the initiative away from people that maybe don't understand what government can do to legitimate gun owners. And I think this, in my opinion, this helps guarantee gun owner rights. I think this validates and protects our Second Amendment rights in a way that we haven't had heretofore, and left us open, quite frankly, to the whims of a population, perhaps, in the cities that don't fully understand what we're talking about here. I think that this bill very clearly says you don't have to have background checks if you don't want to, if you're selling less than 25 guns. The individual person here is protected. The average person that our Constitution was set up on, gathering by himself or herself with his gun, is okay under this bill. I think it guarantees us from protections from government intrusion when it comes to looking at, quite frankly, who has what gun where. The retention period for long guns is down to only 60 days, for goodness sakes. I think that's a real plus compared to what had been offered up before and what's happening at the national level right now. I'm very, very concerned. I think it protects gun owners from the stiff penalties, quite frankly, that were presented in the past. I think innocent gun owners are out working, trying to transfer or sell a gun or give a gun to a friend of theirs. They're able to do so and not face serious criminal penalties. I think that's appropriate, for goodness sakes. This has been a time-honored way we've worked things in this country and in the state of Oregon. I think we're okay. I think it provides for less fees over a period of time for even regulating this program. I think it helps it expand, quite frankly, and clarifies our concealed handgun rights in the state. These are the types of things that I think make this, quite frankly, a bill that is okay, and I think adds serious protections to gun owners here in the state of Oregon. And I think, quite frankly, on a national level, they're going to be looking to the solutions we've crafted here to protect gun owners' rights and allow for responsible public policy and background checks when it's appropriate. So I will be supporting House Bill 2535.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It's amazing to me in my experience in the legislature that we're studying here in the Ways and Means Committee, which I never thought I'd be co-chair of, we'd be looking at a gun bill. And I think what you have to do is, as a senator that represents the gun area of the state of Oregon, I'll tell you for sure I'm a no vote. And when we put long guns into the process of firearms, I know I'm a no vote because I have 10, at least 10 long guns, as I'm sure just about every citizen in Harney County has and my other three counties. I think it's an infringement on your Second Amendment rights, for sure. It brings thousands of new Oregonians into the system. I am a no vote, and I hope that there will be others that will vote no on this bill.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bryant.
Thank you. I wasn't intending to speak, but I think I'd better. Senate Bill 700, of course, came through the Senate Judiciary Committee, which I chaired and I helped draft, and I want to assure everyone that that bill was scheduled, written, and passed before the shooting took place in Colorado and in Georgia. So it was never intended to be a fix for that contagious situation we currently have in the school. There's nothing that we can pass that will solve that problem. I mean, it's going to be a community school responsibility. We can help facilitate some things. There's three other bills I think we're all in agreement with that will help in that area. But there's no simple fix. What this bill was designed to do, and to answer Senator Butler's concerns, your forefathers, your relatives wouldn't have a problem. Their ability to bear arms would only be affected if they were a convicted felon, if they had a mental health problem where they shouldn't be bearing arms, if they were a juvenile, or if they were violating a domestic dispute order. And otherwise, there is no problem. This clearly is not unconstitutional, not Article 700. It is an inconvenience. But it's similar to the inconvenience we go through at an airport when we have the constitutional inconvenience of going through a metal detector. But we've come to accept that, and it adds a few minutes maybe to getting onto that plane, but we still arrive, and we arrive safely. I think as the plane takes off and lands, we breathe a deep sigh of relief. But, you know, that violates, to some extent, our ability to travel freely between states. And that is different than what our forefathers probably had anticipated, but it's non-constitutional. This is a compromise. Some of it I don't like, some of it I do like, but I think it's responsible for the legislature to address it. Law enforcement support us. The group of push was put together by Representative Mannix, who came up with this bill that had, I think, all groups involved. And I just don't want to wait to see what the federal government does. It's our responsibility, and certainly that was intended by the founding fathers, that we are independent states which have great authority, and the federal government wanted us, and at least initially anyway, to see what we thought would be a best solution. And that's how we learn from what we do and what other states do. So I'm just in favor of it.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further questions or comments on House Bill 2535?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
I'm going to give a courtesy vote.
says apparently they need it, but it's not my first priority. But I'll go ahead and courtesy to the Senate President who's here to help assist in getting the necessary votes.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Reed?
Okay, I'll be passing a courtesy yes vote also and reserve the right to vote no on the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, I wanted to comment, and I agree with many of the comments made today, particularly by the opponents of the bill, regarding the Second Amendment. I think that our Second Amendment rights are equal to any First Amendment, or for that matter, all 10 of the amendments, and I think that we need to remember that. As far as the gun lobby, let's see, we have a neutral position, a lesser of two evils position, and a no position. So I don't think the gun lobby is comfortable with this. But that aside, why would the gun lobby have these positions? It's because it's their area of expertise. So it's not that we listen to the gun lobby because they're a lobby group. It's because that is their area of expertise. I think that this bill came about as a result of Senate Bill 700 coming forward, and I think that the excuse for any of these gun control laws coming forward are the many social ills that we have in our society, none of which can be remedied by gun laws and many of the other laws that are actually on our books. I think we need to look at a lot of the laws we have already passed that create the kind of problems that are going on in our society right now. All we need to do is look at other countries who have registered and confiscated firearms and look at where they are. They're not free people. And in fact, Kosovo is a very good example of not being able to defend your rights. Furthermore, there are statistics that tell us that those that have firearms actually protect themselves against crime. So I am going to be voting against this bill, if you haven't already figured that out. And I appreciate the work that has been done. However, we need to be enforcing the current hundreds of laws that are currently on the books. Thank you, Senator. Are there any other further comments? Senator Fisher.
I'd like to ask one question.
Go right ahead.
Right now for a felon who's
right.
Got a firearm.
No.
Is it legal for somebody who's mentally ill? I think that's a good question for our law enforcement folks. I think
they can answer that.
The
enforcement.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, Senator Fisher. We are, after all, not a policy committee, and we were here to look at the fiscal, and we didn't really talk about that. But I think if everybody's talked out, we will get everybody done talking. We will go to a roll call vote. No.
Cannon.
Aye.
Aye.
Rowe.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Crayoli.
No.
Fisher.
No.
Esther.
Aye.
Tim.
No.
Even Adam.
He's observing.
Representative.
Aye.
Westland.
Courtesy. Aye.
Netherly.
No.
Leonard.
Aye.
Slater.
Aye.
Butler.
No.
Aye.
No.
No. House Bill 2535, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we will now move to House Bill 5058.
Excuse me.
We are in House Bill 5058, Representative Butler.
You guys can handle it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Again, we're back to the Oregon Board of Radiologic Technology. RT. House Bill 5058 is the budget bill for the Oregon Board of RT. The board protects and benefits public health and safety by licensing and regulating radiologic technology operators and verifies completion of their continuing professional education requirements. It operates entirely with other funds and from license and examination fees and fines. The board was formerly part of House Bills 5026 and 5027, budget and fee bills for the health-related licensing board for the state, but it was removed for further consideration. So the general government subcommittee reviewed the budget and approved a license fee from $3 to $4 per month, and then considered the budget de novo from that point forward. The General Government Subcommittee recommends a budget of $355,554. That 2.5 full-time equivalency positions up from 2.4. Well, this is an increase of 20.6% over the 1997-99 estimated expenditures. The increase is due to computer and personal enhancements, the board and staff training, inflation, and the revised limitation, revised limited permitted examinations, which we authorized a renewal of the complete program. The subcommittee of the General Government House Ways and Means recommends your approval of this bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Butler. Are there any questions for Representative Butler on House Bill 5058? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 5058? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 5058 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We will move to Senate Bill 5535. And that is Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Bill 5535 is the deal in the state. Repayment measure appropriates $50 million representing the third and final payment passed by the 1993 Oregon Supreme Court ruling regarding the legality of the 1981 transfer of state fund balances into the general fund. As amended, the measure makes the appropriation in the 1997-99 biennium. This treatment is consistent with the prior few payments and creates an uninterrupted three biennial record of remaining. However, unlike the 1997 payments, the timing of this 1999 payment has no relationship whatsoever to the excess revenue. Making this appropriation consistent with the prior two appropriations, that is, in the 1997-99 biennium, and not exempt from the spending of it, to increase the computed 1999-01 spending limit. Madam Chairman, this is a bill that the committee recommends passing.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions on Senate Bill 5535? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 5535? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 5535 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We are now on Senate Bill 5521, Senator Cusack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 5521 is the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and it was previously went through this committee. However, there needed to be an amendment because there was a slight technical change that was one amount was placed in one column that did not belong there, and so that the amounts are changed in the bill. So the subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator Cleto. Are there any questions on Senate Bill 5521? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the passage of Senate Bill 5521? Hearing and seeing none, we're really rolling now. Senate Bill 5521, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senate Bill 1088, Senator Trow.
Madam Chair,
And Co-Chair, Senate Bill 1088 is the landlord-tenant omnibus bill that represents quite a compromise agreement between those who own manufactured dwelling parks and those who rent the property there and own their own residences there, own their own household there. Came to the Joint Ways and Means Committee from the House Business and Affairs Committee. This is a Senate bill and was worked on in the committee that Senator Metzger was on. He knows a great deal about the bill. The bill regulates landlords' right of entry onto rented space, allows landlords renting space to terminate rental agreement under certain conditions, and regulates landlords' ability to dispose of manufactured homes when tenants abandon them. The bill also increases the special assessment on, and this is why it's here, it increases the special assessment on manufactured dwellings from $3 to $6 per year. This increase is expected to generate an additional $500,000 of other fund revenue, which will be used by the Housing and Community Services Department to enhance its manufactured dwelling parks ombudsman program. So the money goes to the ombudsman program. Because the department likely would receive little or no additional resources until November 2000, the subcommittee agreed that the department should seek emergency board approval if it needs additional expenditure limitations for the current biennium. Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Cholin, Senate Bill 1088?
No.
Senator Ayala.
Chairman, the Manufactured Homeowners Oregon and the Manufactured Housing Community group came together, including the lenders and the agents for other interested parties, have become quite adept at compromise. And I think Senator Crow's involvement appears to show the fact that we can reach our property law, but I think he's committed on this issue. I think the Manufactured Housing Community and the Manufactured Homeowners Association are be commended for their tenacity.
Thank you, Senator Fayola. Are there questions or comments on this bill?
Madam Chair, just in closing, I would say that Senator Metzger also worked hard on this in the Senate committee that dealt with this compromise and fashioned this bill. It should be commended as well.
Thank you. Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 1088? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 1088 has received the required majority and is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We aren't listing any carriers. Senator Schroll, would it be all right if Senator Metzger carries?
Sure.
Have a vote on it? What would you prefer?
I'd like to have Senator Trill carry the bill. I carried the substantive bill, and
okay.
I think it would be fair for Senator Trill to carry it the second.
Okay, yeah. Senator Trill will carry.
Can we have a
big
bat in the hall?
That only happens in the House.
Senator Trill will carry on the. No, I don't know that this will go back to you, though. It's already passed the.
It's already passed the hall.
Yeah, so it may not go back. So Representative Butler on the House.
We don't have to duke it out at all.
Okay, all right. I understand the Senate is on the call. We have quite an agenda left as well as some grant applications. Quite sure what to do. How long is the Senate supposed to be working today?
I have no idea.
I think we can squeeze these out right now
if you just go real fast.
All right. Somebody is suggesting we try to move through three of these fairly quickly.
I like that idea.
Okay. Senate Bill 1131. Senator
Kim. Okay. Senate Bill 1131 appropriates $287 to provide financial support for construction of the Oregon Korean War Memorial in Wilsonville. The $287 represents $1 for each Oregonian who died or still missing as a result of military service during the Korean War. The Department of Military Service must transfer the money to the Oregon Trail chapter of the Korean War Veterans Association to be used solely for construction of memorials on the veterans in the state who served during the Korean War. This was presented by Senator Lim. The plans on getting the money to construct the memorial in Wilsonville, and I would urge passage of Senate Bill 1131.
Any questions or comments on Senate Bill 1131? Hearing and seeing none, is there any no votes on Senate Bill 1131? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 1131 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I will try to get a carrier assigned later today. Okay, House Bill 2089.
I've got it. House Bill 2089, which came to the Joint Ways and Means Committee after it was approved by the House, increases the statutory limit on the outstanding revenue bond debt. This increased limit will permit Housing and Community Services Department to continue programs to develop multifamily and single-family affordable housing at projected levels. Increasing the limit on outstanding debt will not by itself authorize the issuance of additional bonds. Each biennium, the department must include in the bond bill SB 5520, this biennium, the amount of bonds it intends to sell during the biennium. The legislature must approve legislation authorizing the amount of actual bonding. The House passed this bill with 56 votes in favor. Four members were excused. The subcommittee recommends your approval.
Thank you. Are there any questions on House Bill 2089? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the passage of House Bill 2089? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2089 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm showing Senator Hannon as the carrier. And let's just keep moving if we can. House Bill 2220, Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2220 was referred to the Ways and Means Committee by the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law with a due pass recommendation. House Bill 2220 is a non-fiscal bill dealing with housekeeping issues only. It establishes the Department of Corrections account with the Treasury for all fees, assessments, and proceeds from the issuance of certificates of participation. It also allows the Department to accept gifts, grants, or donations from any source. All monies in the account are continuously appropriated, and expenditures are limited to the Department's legislatively adopted budget. There's currently a general account for this purpose. As such, this bill does not provide the Department of Corrections with any great expenditure, freedom, or authority that it has under current law. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your support.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Patridge? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2220? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2220 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Pardon?
Is it 2229?
2220. One wrong.
2229, next one up.
2229 will be next.
Oh, okay. I'm a no on this.
You're no on this?
Yeah.
Are there any other no votes on House Bill 2220? Okay.
Could I just ask, I'm sorry, I just need to ask a question here.
Sure.
And I know we're trying to move fast, but does this allow is this giving further authority for the Department of Corrections to build a prison? I mean, is this their authority to let COPs for any? Okay, well, there was a concern when this bill originally showed up. The DLC account, general fund of the state treasury, would also provide all the proceeds from issuance of certificates of participation to be credited to an account and continuously appropriated to the department for purposes authorized by law. So I guess we'd have to, the emergency board then could automatically issue these COPs. That is what it does.
Staff,
would
you like to answer this question?
Yeah, I can. The bill does not provide for any issuance of COPs. It provides for an account to place any proceeds of COP issuance into the board's bank. It does not provide any new authority other than what they currently have from a generic account. But it does provide for them to be able to use the agency account. So it replaces them with a general account and an agency account for them.
I know what it is, and it looks to me like exactly what is being done is being done. It may not get authority to spend these, but it would give the e-board authority to specifically for the Department of Corrections. Try in the middle. And I hope some of my colleagues will come.
Fisher? No, we didn't vote yet. I didn't gavel. So I was counting the no's, and we got off track slightly. So I have two no's to vote. I have Senator, Senator Fisher. Do I have any other no votes on House Bill 2220? Okay, hearing House Bill 2220, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Hannah will carry on the Senate floor. Let's move to House Bill 2229.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2229 authorizes the support and enforcement of the Department of Justice to provide federally mandated services called high-volume automated administrative enforcement services. Simply stated, the bill requires the support enforcement decision when requested by another state to search the state databases and seize assets of non-custodial parents who are delinquent in their court chains. These are parents living in another state believing that that is in Oregon. Failure to comply with the federal mandate could result in a loss of significant federal and funds. The Support Enforcement Division provides child support services under contract to Adult and Family Services Division of DHR, with AFS generally providing federal funds in the appropriate general fund match from its budget. Subsidy approved expenditure limitations of $373,582 of other funds request the Department of Administrative Services unscheduled limitations. Support Enforcement Division and Adult and Family Services must identify resources to cover the cost of each of and report to the emergency board. Subcommittee recommends approval of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Patrick. Are there any questions for Representative Patrick on House Bill 2229? Okay, hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the passage of House Bill 2229? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2229 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we're not trying to carry on that. We'll find that later. We have one last substantive bill, House Bill 2937, Senator Kim.
Okay. House Bill 2937 came from the Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee on Civil Law. House Bill 2937 allows the Criminal Justice Commission to meet the legislative directive to pass functions for the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee entirely through other funds. Specifically, this bill enables the Commission to retain 115% of the amount of expenditure limitation to allow for variations in the other fund's revenue stream and enables the Commission to extend more than the $50,000 limit set by current law to carry out its required functions. Without these changes, additional general fund support would be needed. I urge your passage of House Bill 2937.
Okay. Are there any questions on House Bill 2937?
I'm sure just briefly for the record, I feel like I need to go on record. The only reason I'm voting for this bill, I feel like this is a subsidy for the Criminal Justice Commission. But I'm voting for this bill because I've made commitments to work on the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Commission over the course of this interim. I put a bill in this time to abolish the Asset Forfeiture Advisory Commission. I believe there's substantial problems and the focus of what it's doing. So I will work diligently over the course of the interim, obtaining this money in order to accomplish that.
Thank you, Patrick. Any further questions or comments on House Bill 2937? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2937? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2937 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Krasanski will carry on the House side, and Senator Gordley will carry on the Senate side. And there is a recommendation to us that we do the grant applications in a vote on them in a block. I would ask Representative Brock to...
Madam Chair, I would move approval of grant applications for the Department of Education for Charter Schools, Refugee Children, School Impact, Reading Excellence, Head Start Research, and Service Learning Demonstration Projects. These are all grant applications that the Department of Ed is asking our approval of.
Okay. Representative Ross has moved approval of the five grant applications that you see on your agenda that all came out of the Subcommittee on Education. Are there any questions on any of these grant applications? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to approval of these grant applications? Hearing and seeing none, they are approved. And we finished our agenda.
Yay.
Good job.
Thank you very much. And we are adjourned.
I like. Really like.
Whoa.
All right, baby.
Okay.